Hi, I'm John Trader with M2Sys Healthcare Solutions, and welcome to the next installment of our podcast series where we interview industry professionals for information, analysis, and opinions on the biggest issues that face the healthcare industry. Social media has fundamentally changed the patient-to-patient and patient-to-provider communications relationship. The advent of transparent, real-time social media communication platforms that allow open and honest dialogue presents a host of opportunities for healthcare facilities to capitalize on positive patient sentiment and build a trusted support community to actively engage with. Patient evangelists can be identified and leveraged to spread goodwill and build brand equity to help maintain trust and confidence in healthcare services. Just as the explosion of social media communication can translate into many positives for a healthcare facility, it can also work as a platform for patients to voice complaints and negativity. Healthcare providers should be aware that social media use requires a detailed and comprehensive plan for employees to follow that dictates guidelines and procedures for patient communication and what steps to take in the event of positive or negative expressions. Are healthcare facilities adequately prepared to handle the new paradigm of social media communication? In our latest podcast, we invited Liz Scherer and Ed Bennett to discuss the issues surrounding social media use in healthcare, including a detailed discussion on how patients and providers use these platforms to communicate, the perils of being reactive versus proactive in social media use, crisis communication in social media, and what it means to truly be nimble and transparent when using social media. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this month's podcast with Liz Scherer and Ed Bennett.
Hi, my name is John Trader with M2Sys Healthcare Solutions, and welcome to another online learning podcast in our continuing series of discussions on the healthcare industry. A bit of a first today, as we welcome not one, but two healthcare professionals to the podcast in an effort to explore more on the topic of patient communications, specifically the paradigm shift that the healthcare industry has experienced over the past few years as patients have become more empowered to take control and have more accountability for their own care. This, coupled with the explosion in the use of social media channels, has opened the door for an incredible influx of information and communication about health conditions, provider care, experience with chronic diseases, and a lot more, some positive and some negative, but all pertaining to the healthcare facilities where patients were treated. Today, our goal is to explore this topic a little deeper by examining how social media has changed the provider-patient relationship, potential fallout a healthcare facility can experience if a patient discovers mistakes on their medical records, whether healthcare is adequately prepared in the event of a communication crisis, the importance of transparency in communications, capitalizing on positive social media and dealing with the negative, plus insight on what healthcare facilities can proactively do to prevent negativity. Joining me on the podcast today are Liz Scherer and Ed Bennett, healthcare professionals who specialize in communications that have graciously agreed to lend us their time and discuss these topics. We start with Liz Scherer, who is a health journalist, digital copywriter, social media strategist, consultant, blogger, and women's health advocate. With almost three decades' experience in the healthcare arena, Liz has worked in the private and public sectors on behalf of web-based and traditional science publishers, public relations and advertising agencies, pharmaceutical companies, and nonprofits. Her work has appeared in websites, wire services, videos, women's magazines, peer-reviewed journals, and in conference proceedings. She is also the author of Journey to Parenthood. Liz's blog, Flash Free, which you can find on the web at flashfree.me, is geared towards providing evidence-based, alternative, and integrative strategies to manage the medical, emotional, social, and physical challenge of menopause and midlife. This year, it was honored to be included in Healthline's Top Menopause Blogs of 2012 and FrugalDad.com's Top Health, Mind, and Body Sites. It is currently ranked among the 30 Top Menopause Blogs, Top 100 Women's Health Blogs, and Top 100 Best Wellness Blogs. Liz is a member of the Corporate Advisory Board for Cognovant Incorporated, and a former member of the Social Media Advisory Board for the Council of Responsible Nutrition's Life, Supplemented Campaign, and Health Justice CT. which is a Connecticut-based nonprofit geared towards eliminating social, racial, and gender health disparities. She is also a former board secretary for the Maryland-based nonprofit Kenya Connect. Liz is principal of the strategic health writing/consulting firm Digital Copy LLC and an active member of the National Association of Science Writers and the Association for Healthcare Journalists. Welcome to the podcast, Liz, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Our next guest is Ed Bennett. Ed is the Director of Web and Communications Technology at the University of Maryland Medical System and is responsible for all aspects of their web program. Ed has over 20 years of experience working on the Internet and has worn many hats as a programmer, designer, consultant, information architect, startup participant, and more. Since 1999, he's led the University of Maryland Medical System web program, building out large, content-rich websites designed to educate and attract new patients. He pioneered search engine optimization techniques that are now standard for hospital websites. 4 years ago, he founded the Hospital Social Network List, a resource tracking social media activities of U.S. hospitals. An active member of the healthcare social media community, Ed sits on the external advisory board of the Mayo Clinic Center for Social Media. While at home on Twitter and Facebook, his favorite networking tool is the telephone. You can find Ed on the web at ebennett, that's ebennett.org. Ed, welcome to today's podcast, and thank you for spending some time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To kick off the conversation today, let's begin our discussion with a review of some statistics. For example, a recent Pew Research Center study says that 1 in 3 American adults have used the web to figure out a medical issue. Roughly 1/3 of patients use tablets or mobile devices on a daily basis for research and or to book appointments. In other recent surveys, 94% of prospective patients said the reputation of a medical facility is important in hospital selection. 51% of patients say they feel more valued as a patient via digital health communications. 77% of patients used search prior to booking an appointment. 90% of adults ages 18 to 24 said they would trust medical information shared by others in their social media networks. 41% of people said social media would affect their choice of a healthcare provider. And finally, 26% of all hospitals in the U.S. participate in social media. That was as of January 2013. Liz, I want to start with you, and I want to ask, what can you tell us about how social media is changing the patient-to-patient and patient-to-provider communications paradigm, and have you observed that more patients are crowdsourcing by seeking medical advice and provider care from peer reviews and opinions?
I'd actually like to address the latter question first. I think it really depends on the type of information that they're seeking. I believe some of the sources that you were quoting at the beginning of this podcast from Pew basically still shows that clinicians remain a central resource for patients when it comes to technical issues, if they want a medical diagnosis, if they need information about prescription drugs and side effects, things like that. They're turning to peers more for emotional support. They're looking for a really quick fix for, you know, an everyday problem, say like a bug bite or something like that, or if they just need practical advice. So I think it's important, despite the fact that social is definitely central to the healthcare seeking movement, I still think that at the very center of that cycle, if you will, if you want to envision a wheel, the clinician still rules. And so I don't believe that that has really changed. I don't think we're seeing that. It really depends on the type of information they're looking for. Having said that, however, there is a very robust movement of patients who want to become patient advocates. Again, a lot of these people have suffered from chronic illnesses or have had spouses or family members who have likewise suffered and have been very disenchanted by the way that the healthcare system treats them, whether it was access to data or access to information about treatment, whatever it is. So I think what is going on is you're seeing a demand among a very small population of patients to actually become part of the overall healthcare provision system, Whether or not that will actually come to fruition anytime soon is an entirely different topic.
And let me make just a couple of comments on that. I think that the demand that consumers have is far outstripping the supply that hospitals are bringing to the table when it comes to social media. There's a great report from PricewaterhouseCoopers about 6 months ago that showed that consumers trust information they find in social media that comes from doctors more than they trust information coming from hospitals, more than from health insurers, and more than from drug companies. Doctors by far are the most trustworthy sources of medical information, but the number of doctors who are participating in social media is extremely small compared to the number of doctors that are out there. So I think there's a great opportunity there. Public is certainly ready for it, but there's a lot of factors that keep physicians from participating at the level they could be.
Okay, thanks for the feedback, Liz and Ed, on that question. That's very helpful insight. Let's shift our focus to some of the current problems that the healthcare industry faces and how patients may react if they discover that a mistake has been made, let's say, on their medical record. Specifically, let's talk about duplicate medical records and overlays, which continue to be two pressing problems for the healthcare industry that jeopardize patient safety and ultimately raise the cost of care. As healthcare shifts to digitizing medical data and more patients gain access to their electronic medical records, whether it be through a patient portal, whether it be directly through the doctor's office, what potential damages to a healthcare facility can materialize through discovery of a duplicate or an overlay by a patient on their own medical record?
Well, I'll respond to that. I think that it's less of a danger and more of an opportunity to have another set of eyes from the eyes of the person who's actually impacted on these different medical records so that they can sort this out. And a lot of times mistakes are made. A lot of times what is put down in the medical record is more for insurance purposes than for the actual medical record. So there's a lot of times that there's just a lot of confusion about what is being said and why is it being said there. And I think that it's not really a danger because the patients are still getting the same treatment they've always been getting, but now they have the ability to take a look at the records and question it and give feedback and hopefully get it straightened out. I know that I've recently gotten access to my medical records. I have found a lot of information that was old and out of date. And as I visit with my doctors, we get it updated. We get things taken off that should be taken off. We add explanations. And I never view it as a problem, but more of an opportunity to get things, to get the data clean.
And to that extent also, just to build on what Ed's saying, it is an opportunity, but I think it's also important to understand that, you know, state laws vary on how medical records can be amended. And so, generally, you're not erasing the information, you're correcting it, and it's done in a very specific mm-hmm. way. So you can't overwrite, say, the initial health record, which is why it's so critical for that patient, clinician, or institutional relationship to remain in place. Because it really depends on what state regulations are in place, and there's certain standards, even whether it's a paper copy or an electronic copy. So, and there are also rules with regards to amendments and flagging amendments. So I think that it's a lot more complicated than just finding a mistake and amending it. So I think that one of the key things Ed just said was he has spoken to his physician and they correct it, because there's a way to make corrections that are within regulations versus just saying, this, I found this error and now I'm going to correct it myself. And I think that's a really important thing that patients need to understand.
Okay. So basically, your opinion is that this is actually a positive for the industry in the sense that you've got another set of eyes that are looking at the electronic medical record and possibly spotting an error or maybe misinformation that's on the record itself, and not so much as potentially damaging to the healthcare facility, but rather could be something positive because they maybe weren't able to spot the error themselves and now they have the patients in and more engaged in their own care. So is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, just 2 days ago, I saw my doctor and they're reviewing just regular checkup and she's reviewing my chart and she says, oh, I see that you're on this medicine. And I said, well, I was prescribed that medicine 9 months ago for a cold and I took it for 3 weeks and I'm not on it anymore. And she said, okay, so she amended the record to show that this was not an active prescription for me and that it was an episode that happened sometime in the past. That's the type of thing where it may not be really evident to the doctor who's looking at this record what was going on, and but my ability to explain what happened and the context is really valuable.
Okay.
And I also, Ed, maybe you can comment on this more, but my understanding is when health systems start to get up to speed on the turnover to the electronic information technology, you almost need that second set of eyes to make sure that there is, that the checks and balances are in place and that you're not missing something when you start doing that kind of changeover. Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. And this is not something that's going to happen very quickly. It's going to be, I think, measured in maybe a decade or so before we get to a point that we can say we have enough experience of electronic medical records that the majority of people can have confidence that their data is accurate and that there are processes in place to maintain that accuracy.
Okay. Great. Thank you for that feedback. That actually leads into my next question, and there might be a little bit of overlap based on one of Liz's responses, that there are different laws that apply in different states on how a medical record can be amended. Let me go through the question, and if there is overlap, we can skip to the next one, or if you have any additional comments, then feel free to chime in. But we often hear about the subject of healthcare providers assuming a proactive rather than a reactive communication role with their patients, especially in light of that paradigm shift and social media coming into the forefront of patient communications, patient-provider communications. In the event that a patient does discover a mistake on their own medical record, what actionable steps can healthcare providers take to immediately address and rectify the situation? And once again, Liz, I know you mentioned that there are different laws. Is that too much of an overlap question, or is that something we can expound on?
I kind of feel like, I think Ed at least started to touch upon it with his own anecdotal experience with this physician, which is pointing out to the doctor that you found this error and then working to correct that. And I think there has to be, at the same time, some kind of reliance on the provider to follow through with that, making sure that all the T's are crossed on their end. So that might be where there might not be as fluid a system for that. I think it really depends on the institution and how far along they are in terms of either transferring over to the electronic system or actually having the technology in place to communicate amongst different departments. I think that's where you start to, that's where errors happen, and that's where you start to see a lot of the communication kind of drop off. So there's various type of communication requirements within that key relationship that need to also occur at the same time or thereafter.
And I'd like to kind of address, I think, one of the assumptions of that question. One of the assumptions of that question was that doctors are using social media to do this, and they simply aren't. None of this is happening within a social media context. It's all happening if I log into my portal and I look at my medical record through an online portal, or I'm at my doctor for an office visit and reviewing the information and updating it. But doctors aren't using social media for that kind of patient communication, except for a very, very small number.
Okay. Thank you for the insight on that question, Liz and Ed. Let's turn for a moment to the topic of crisis communications. It seems as if the days of playing ostrich with your head in the sand are long gone, and consumers have become a lot less forgiving to organizations for failure to act in a time of crisis with a timely, what's considered a transparent message. My question for both of you is, how important is it for a healthcare organization to have a crisis communications plan in place, and what percentage of facilities would you estimate actually have one?
Well, I work in a hospital, so I can answer this. I mean, any reasonable-sized hospital should have a crisis communication plan, and as far as I know, they all do. Whether the new wrinkle, of course, is now social media needs to be part of that plan. Mm-hmm. And thought needs to be given to how will social media be used in the event of a crisis, whether it's a disaster, major snowstorm, there's been a fire at the hospital, whatever the crisis happens to be. Or if it's a crisis that's more of a public affairs crisis, there's some sort of issue that affects the reputation of the hospital. So all hospitals have crisis communications plans, or they should, and they should have had them for decades. The question is, how aware and tuned into social media are they as part of that plan?
Is it your opinion, Ed, that a majority or a large percentage of hospitals have written in social media guidelines into their current crisis communication plans, or are some kind of behind the times a little bit?
Well, I think the approach hospitals are taking is not so much the first place where they look isn't so much the crisis communication plan, but they look at just the general guidelines of how they want to use social media as an organization. So that can be, what are guidelines for employees and staff about how they should behave on social media when they're talking about themselves and as an employee of the hospital. It can also be setting up clear guidelines on who is responsible for speaking for the organization on the web and on Facebook and other social media sites. And so I think most hospitals have gotten on board with that. They have these policies and guidelines in place. Crisis communications would be just one piece of that.
Okay. Thanks for the feedback. I'd like to talk about another topic that social media has brought to the forefront in healthcare for many facilities, and that's the topic of transparency. As many healthcare brands are challenged in this day and age to become more human, engage with their community more, and also customers, prospects, stakeholders, and even competition, one of the overarching themes that keeps coming up is to be transparent. And of course, transparency refers to how much data is shared, which should not be confused with authenticity, which refers to the truth of your words and actions. Can you discuss how important transparency has become now that patients are empowered to seek information and advice on their own?
Well, I think that kind of speaks to patient advocate movement that I mentioned a little while ago, that there is a demand from the patient side, or at least a group of patients, that they want to be part of, they really want to be part of the relationship. It's been a buzz phrase for a very long time that, you know, this patient-provider relationship is symbiotic, and I don't think until social started to kind of take hold that was necessarily true. I think it was much more individualized depending on the provider. So I think what's happened now is, as access to information becomes easier and greater, I think that that relationship is being forced to change. And I'm not quite sure how ready a lot of providers and institutions are to meet the demands of the patients. And I think that's where you're going to see a lot of the struggle happening. Some of that is driven by HIPAA laws, and some of that is driven by malpractice and insurance. Ed mentioned a little while ago that the doctors that are on, or the physicians that are on social media, aren't necessarily talking about medical records. In fact, a lot of them have some very significant restrictions about what they can talk about, and if you notice, they still remain siloed, talking amongst themselves more than they're talking to patients. So I think you're seeing this opening, but I'm not quite sure that it's there yet. I think there's a demand, but I'm not sure it's being realized.
We've started to do, well, we actually started about a year and a half, 2 years ago. We've moved some of our patient support groups into Facebook, and we have about five right now, different support groups. Each one of them is managed by a nurse practitioner, the same person who was managing the traditional face-to-face, in real-life type support groups. And they're closed, secret Facebook groups where you have to be invited in. And they are very popular. These are folks who have faced life-changing chronic issues like organ transplant or very serious chronic conditions. They're being treated at our hospital. And there's now a community where they can talk to each other, share their experiences, but they also have the nurse practitioner who's running the group, who can step in, point them to accurate information, tell them when they need to check with their doctor about an issue. But most of the time, they're talking to each other and helping each other out. And I think that's a model that you'll start seeing other hospitals doing. doctors still aren't involved in that. It's the nurse practitioner who is running this group, but it's a very good first step.
I didn't realize that nurse practitioners were taking such an active role in that capacity, at least where you are. That's new information and good to know. I actually, in some research I did prior to the podcast, I found a site called Patients Like Me, which both of you may have heard about already, where people who suffer from chronic diseases can go to a, similar to what Ed was referring to, a support group and exchange information. But I also found out that the two founders of the Patients Like Me portal are actually selling their data to pharmaceutical companies. So I guess what I'm driving at is that there are these support groups out there, and Ed, you gave a great example of what you're doing there at the University of Maryland Medical System. But it's good to see that hospitals and healthcare in general are taking advantage of social media in that capacity. And I want to kind of shift to the next question, which is, once again, a little bit of overlap from our prior discussion, but I want to get some feedback on both of you about dealing with positive and negative communication. It seems that success in social media is largely determinant on the ability to adequately prepare for really anything that comes along. We talked about crisis communications, for example, earlier, and how important it is for hospitals to have an updated crisis communications plan that includes modern communication portals, modern communication platforms. So being nimble, being transparent, being honest are all hallmarks really of any social media strategy and are key ingredients to using this particular communication channel effectively. With that said, can you tell me a little bit about whether you feel that hospitals are prepared to deal with the social media positive and negative communication from their patient base, or do they still have a long way to go? We talked earlier about how only 26% of hospitals are using social media in any capacity. I guess my question is, I myself have read stories about patients being negative on social media, which, you know, we all know that healthcare is a business. It's very competitive to get patients in your door and to keep them for ultimately a lifetime. Do either of you or both of you feel that hospitals are adequately prepared to deal with any type of positive or negative communication, or is there still a lot of work to be done in that area?
All right, I'll go first. This is Ed. I think that it depends on the hospital. I think larger hospitals that are large enough where they have, say, a media relations person or team, a public affairs person or team, communications functions, those are probably your 26% number. When you look at those stats, you have to remember that the vast majority of hospitals in that make up the number that's floated around, about 5,000 hospitals in the U.S., vast majorities of these hospitals are very small hospitals, sometimes less than 20 or 30 beds. So when you look at the hospitals that are large enough to have these issues, I'd say that most of them are using social media and are aware of it and are monitoring it. I've been monitoring social media for my facility now for about 3 years. The vast majority of mentions of our hospital are either positive or neutral. Maybe once every 2 or 3 months, something pops up that could be considered negative that needs to be addressed in some way. And usually those, so far, all of those have been handled quickly and to the satisfaction of the patient. So it's not as big a problem as it might first seem. Most people are not talking about your hospital, and if they are, it's either neutral or positive.
Okay. And Ed, let me ask you a follow-up question based on your answer. You mentioned that you monitor the social media activity on the web for the University of Maryland Medical System, which is a very large medical system. Do you have a team of folks that are working with you on communications, and where does that responsibility fall under? Is it corporate communications? How does that work at your facility?
Right. Well, in my facility, I report up through the Senior Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs. And everybody on that team is aware of social media, using it, and is conversant in it. I'm the one in charge of monitoring what's being said. I use a tool called Radiant 6. Mm-hmm. I have about 100 different search phrases that it monitors, and I get updates every hour on any mentions across all of our properties and all of our organizations. I monitor that, and if something needs attention, I send it to the appropriate person. If we see someone who's mentioning a situation where they feel that they weren't getting the right service, we will send it to our patient advocate and contact the person via whatever platform they were using. Let them know that we are aware of their problem or aware of what their comment, that we want to talk with them and address their concern. And here is the name and here is the phone number of the patient advocate who is waiting for your call. And because I get updates every hour, I'm usually able to spot a message that needs follow-up in a very, very quick time frame, let them know that we're aware of it and we want to help them. And that's usually all that's needed to turn a negative into a positive.
But to that end, too, and I don't want to jump in and ask a question, but Ed mentioned Radian 6. That can be a costly way, very effective, very, mm-hmm. The cost associated with having hourly updates from a data crawl can be substantial. And so my question would be for the smaller institutions, the other 74% or whatever the number is, mm-hmm. that don't necessarily have that kind of access, is there a way for them to at least get some kind of idea of what's going on in their community or in the surroundings without necessarily using a Radian 6?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of free tools. There's Google Alerts that can be very effective if configured correctly. But I think the most powerful tool that those hospitals have is communicate with their employees. Tell their employees, we care about what people are saying about our organization on Facebook and Twitter. If you hear something where someone's dissatisfied, let us know. Be the eyes and ears of our organization. Let us know if there's a problem that we can address. And now you've gone from having one person trying to worry about this to having potentially hundreds of people who are keeping their ears and eyes open for anything that they can respond to. And I think that if you create a presence and you actually use that presence to be part of your community, people will know where to come when they need to talk to you.
I think that's key. It's not just creating the presence, but it's being actively engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where a lot of institutions or even brands have gone wrong is, at least in the early days of Twitter, they were on Twitter, but they never engaged with their community. And that is an automatic sign for failure and problems later on down the road.
Liz, that was an excellent question, and Ed, that was great insight as to what you're actually doing at the University of Maryland Medical System. I think you're spot on with your assessment that it has to be a culture of monitoring and keeping an eye out for any really type of positive or negative comments, because as Liz pointed out, there are a lot of these small rural hospitals that just simply can't afford some of the tools that are used for monitoring social media. But if you can somehow, because a lot of people think or feel that employees of a healthcare organization are really the key stakeholders in that organization, and they should be aware of, for example, what's going on in social media communications, how patients are using it, how important it is to address, if there does happen to be a negative comment come up, how to address that very quickly so it does not turn into something larger than it really should be. So that's a very good addendum to that question. Let me ask either one of you, can you think of any examples where hospitals have suffered or lost business or experienced any type of damage to their brand name due to viral negative stories or headlines on social media?
Well, what comes to mind for me is when Beyonce and Jay-Z took over a wing of, I don't remember which New York hospital it was, but I'm not sure how that hospital ultimately dealt with it, but there was a lot of negative press about that because patients' families were being turned away from the maternity ward. There was a lot of issues around this kind of privileged exclusivity, and that's the kind of thing you would deal with in a larger urban setting, but that's where social can really be powerful in a negative way. And I think that's the slippery slope of social, is that once a movement starts on a platform, you need to contain it before it gets too big and it moves on to other platforms. And there are examples of that in every industry, not just healthcare.
Right. And the example that comes to mind to me was a few months ago, an OBGYN at a hospital was frustrated about with one of her patients and made some, who kept missing appointments and without notice, and made some flippant remark on, I can't remember whether it was Twitter or Facebook, about something like, I wonder if the patient will mind if I don't show up when her cesarean is due. And it was one of those kind of flip sarcastic comments that would have normally just been said between the doctor and maybe a colleague in the hallway, but she said it in social media and it got picked up and there was a lot of indignation. It made the news. And in this situation, to me, what was most interesting about it was that the hospital responded in a completely appropriate way. They looked at the situation. They looked at the context. They said the doctor did not break any privacy or HIPAA rules, did not mention the patient's name. There was no identifying information at all, but that the comment was not really appropriate. And they said, we are not going to fire the doctor. We are going to talk to the doctor. We're going to use this as a learning opportunity, not just for this particular doctor, but for all of their staff. They responded to the whole thing very quickly in a matter of hours. And that response took care of the problem.
And I think
that's really the appropriate way to handle it.
And to Ed's point, and just to reiterate and to promote what he's saying, it's having those functions in place to correct the situation and address the situation very quickly, you know, and not just hope it's going to go away. And I think that's the lesson of socialists. It's not going to just go away. And when it comes to healthcare in particular, it's a whole different ballgame. And so clearly UMD has systems in place and are well-versed in how to do this and handle it quickly. And it's just, you know, hearing about some of these systems firsthand, they're an example for other hospitals in the nation.
Well, the appropriate way to deal with things. Let me just be clear. This didn't happen at my hospital.
No,
this is out in
the middle of somewhere.
I think what
I'm saying is you guys also have systems in place to deal with these kind of issues. So.
Right. And the primary tool that we have is our patient advocate. We have a patient advocate that's their full-time job. And they're there in the hospital dealing with any issues that come up. And when something happens that shows up in social media, we funnel it to her, and she takes care of it right away.
Okay. Thanks for the feedback on that question as well. I was actually, one of the areas that I was thinking about in terms of possible damage to a healthcare branding was the data breach. Have either of you heard of any instances in the healthcare industry where facility has experienced the data breach, and as a result of that, they did not address the situation in a timely manner, which really damaged their brand name?
Are you referring to a data breach that would lead to like a malpractice?
Yes, any type of data breach that would expose patients. I know a lot of times these criminals look for financial information, not so much healthcare information, but nonetheless, data being compromised at a healthcare facility and perhaps a healthcare facility not addressing it in a timely manner or not being authentic about their response.
I haven't heard of a situation where a data breach happened and the hospital did not respond appropriately. There are some very strict rules in place. I think they're actually even stronger in the last year or so than previous about when a hospital needs to report a data breach and communicate to the people affected. And from everything I've seen, when these things breaches happen, hospitals are taking that seriously. They're responding. They're contacting the people that have been affected, and they're handling it. I haven't heard of anyone who ignored a situation and then suffered reputational harm because of it.
That's good to hear. That gives me a lot of confidence in the system, and I'm happy to hear that feedback. I kind of want to lead into our last question, and once again, I apologize if there's a little bit of overlap because a lot of the questions that I've had your feedback has addressed them, but I want to jump into this question about being prepared to deal with negativity in another sense. But in social media, we often hear about advice and opinions on being proactive versus reactive as a key component of an overall strategy and helping to clearly define the purpose of participating in this particular communication platform. For example, if you're trying to gain customers or patients in this case, your social program is more about content creation, influence identification, and virility. For example, you can use blog posts, promotional tweets, creating and posting videos, and blog commenting. My question is, taking into consideration the importance of being proactive in social media, what can hospitals do to prevent negative headlines? In other words, what proactive steps can they take which could possibly diffuse the situation before it has a chance to go public or spread virally? And Ed, you had mentioned it's a lot of times about ingraining that into the corporate culture, that they are the stewards of the hospital reputation. They're the ones that by their everyday actions are having an effect on the patient base and thus the positive or negative comments that could come from it. So is there any other proactive steps that a hospital or a healthcare facility could take to maybe diffuse the situation before it gets a chance to become a lot more negative virally?
Definitely. And the primary thing that they should be doing is building up the community of people that they're connecting with in social media. And we've seen this over and over again in other industries that have very large social media communities, that if someone comes in and complains about the company, asserts something that the company did that wronged them, many times the organization doesn't need to respond. It has such a large community of people that are fans of the organization or think highly of the organization that the community in that social media context, they respond for the hospital or for the organization. And I think that when you look at places like a Children's Hospital in Boston that have something like 750,000 fans on Facebook, that's a place that if someone came into their Facebook page and complained about it, there'd be hundreds of happy patients and people who have good opinion of that hospital who would step up to defend it. So I think that's probably the first line of defense is connect with the folks who already like you, make sure that they're monitoring what's going on and let them speak for you.
That's great feedback. Thank you, Ed. We hope that you enjoyed our segment today on social media and healthcare and encourage you to tune in for future podcasts where we address key issues and topics in healthcare from industry experts. If you have an idea for a podcast topic, please email us at marketing@m2sys.com. Include your contact information and our editors will review your suggestion. We've reached the end of our segment today, and I would like to take a moment to thank our guests, Liz Scherer and Ed Bennett, for their time and for sharing their knowledge on this subject with our listeners. Again, you can find Liz on the web at her blog by visiting flashfree.me, that's flashfree.me, and Ed over at his site, ebennett.org, that's ebennett.org. This is John Trader with M2SYS Healthcare Solutions, and I want to thank you for listening in to our podcast today. We look forward to having you join us on our next episode during the month of June. Ed and Liz, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.